It's Fish and Frank in the chair, Robert across from me, and our special guest star, presentation person, I mean, outdoorsman extraordinaire, Jim Logson. How you doing, buddy?
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. He gets so excited. You know,
you thought I was terrifying.
Yeah. Gotta love it. And, okay, let's see how the studio audience reacts to him. I'm not sure. We'll check it out. Oh, yeah. No, they like him. He's past the audience test. Okay, you can stay. We're not going to throw you out. All right. So, anyway, we're going to do a little bit different here, and we're going to talk a little bit about hunting and fishing and a little more mixed it up today. How's your week going, Robert?
It's going pretty well. It's going pretty well. Jim's going to be interesting to talk to. He's a phenomenal fisherman, hunter, and...
Well, let's take a minute. We only got a couple minutes here. Okay. We went to ICAST this last week.
Yes.
And there was some really cool stuff, kind of the show of redundancy. It was a lot of...
Which ICAST is where all the fishing products that are being new this year are being introduced for people who aren't aware of it.
Yeah, and there was one, a guy's got a lure with a pull string on it and all this other kind of stuff. And there was... I don't really see a lot of new stuff coming out this year. Quantum made one lure, redid it. Well, they instead of putting blue highlights on it, they put red highlights on it. I didn't get any more than that. So
seen a lot of that.
Yeah. And what was your anything that came off from the show for you, Jim?
I have to agree. For the most part, everybody just kind of upgraded or changed the way they were doing it.
Like they changed a color or something, yeah. But it didn't really seem like much more than that. It was to me kind of like, okay, I've got a paddle tail here, and I want to. I made a red tail instead of a green tail this year.
Exactly. There's new colors and such, as like in the X-Rep family that came out with four new colors, and also like in the Twitch and Stick there in the Storm that came out with four new colors, but the lure's already been out.
We could spend a month on Twitch and Sticks because, let's face it, that is the hottest lure, you know, going anywhere. And I like the new color I like the new colors that the Twitch and Stick has. I mean, we sell hundreds of those a month. Hundreds a month. It literally, the ghost one is just crazy.
It literally catches fish.
Yeah, it catches fish in almost any aspect. Hey there, this is Fish and Frank, and we're back. that took a minute. We gotta get settled in because of that, and we've got a kind of a neat show for you today. Jim, you're kind of big into the hunting things.
I love to hunt.
Love to hunt.
Love to hunt.
All right, well, let's go. What's your favorite gun?
A Savage, for sure.
Okay.
We're talking rifles, I love a Savage.
All right. What's your favorite thing to hunt for?
I like whitetail, but I'll do a little hog hunting here or there. So
let's start with the hog, because that's kind of a Florida thing. I mean, whitetail to me is a little bit northern, but let's go to the Florida.
But hog is starting to become super popular throughout the whole Middle East. I mean, they're getting them all the way up into Michigan where they get them now.
Oh, they got wild hogs almost into Canada now. I mean, the smartest, most prolific species in the history of the planet is the hog. They are smarter than dolphins, and it's the only creature on the planet that if you have a domestic pig, and he gets out, he starts running, and he takes off running in the wild, he will actually grow tusk, wiry curly hair,
correct,
and revert back to the wild. Same way if you take a wild pig and put him in a pen, it doesn't take that long. Yeah, I know, okay. You can tell Captain Kale just showed up. And if you take a wild hog, put him in a pen, eventually it will go back to its domestic self.
Correct.
And the weird thing about hogs is I raised hogs when I was in high school. That's how I bought my first car with the money I was made from raising hogs. Was if you're nice to a hog and you pat them and talk nice to them and feed them well, they have more babies. If you're mean to them, and you got to move, Kale. Robert's got to get back.
Got to work that way too.
Yeah. Well, if you're mean to a hog and you're not doing what you should do, they will have less babies. They don't have a set amount of babies. It all depends on how well you treat them. This is okay. We're having to move chairs and stuff. We're in a brand new studio down here in Charlotte Harbor. It's brandy new. The mics are all hung. Everything's all done. We're not sitting around the old desk. I kind of miss my old desk. I don't know where I have a jar of honey that's supposed to be here. I have all these other things that are supposed to be here. Nothing's here. I don't know what's going on.
Some of that good honey.
So what is your favorite gun for hunting hogs?
I'm I lean toward a 270 caliber a lot. I'll use that for just about all around for most of everything I do, anything from whitetail to hog.
So a 270, does that give, how much range do you get in a 270?
200-300 yards is not a bad shot for it. You reach out past 200 yards, you want to rest it, you don't want to freehand it, but it'll go out to 500 yards easy.
So that's a real nice gun for shooting fields, and if you've got railroad track or something like that, you got to be careful because that thing's going to go a lot further.
Yeah, 100 yards out, it's on, and it's a pretty flat projectile compared to where some of the other calibers, they want to arc to where 270, it's pretty flat.
So you're shooting a lot straighter, you don't have to raise your scopes as high.
Well, yeah, you can zeroed in, put it an inch high at 100 yards, and you can still hit bullseye at 200 by just putting it on 200 bullseye, to where a lot of other calibers you have to watch because as it goes out, it arches in the travel of the bullet.
Okay. Well,
bullet only does two things once it leaves the barrel of a gun. Slows down and drops.
Yeah.
Well, I guess, yeah. Now, everything with this, you use the same gun for both critters, deers and hogs. When I was hunting hogs, I like something short, powerful, easy to swing in the brush. I want as short a barrel as I can get. Because I'm not going to get a distant shot on a hog.
Yeah, in Florida, 100 yards is a typical shot anyway.
Yeah. I'm usually thinking now, like with Captain Kale, he goes out and
takes a nap.
Yeah, he takes a nap, jumps up and shoots at him. And, so anyway, what's going on here is that what kind of gun do you what caliber do you like?
I've been real happy with my 223 out of my AR or NATO 5.56. It's a lot of fun. I'm not shooting more than 30 yards has been my longest shot.
Well, see, to me, that's in Southwest Florida. Now, Jim, you hunt more northern Florida, so you have more open country.
Yeah. I'll hunt where I can go hunting. Correct.
I would really like to try the new 50 caliber Beowulf.
Yeah. I hope you're shooting beyond 30 yards.
No. Right in 30 yards, they're cleaned and field dressed for you.
Yeah, when you hit them in one, and it's good. It automatically field dress them and everything goes.
And if they do run away, they run in two different directions.
Exactly.
This is true.
The front half one way, the left side another.
Where I hunt, it's pretty tight quarters, so. I love handguns, 357 Magnum, 45. Love doing it with a handgun.
So, yeah, I can see that because I've heard stories with you and your other counterpart of you're sleeping, he sees a hog, he jumps up, runs around to get away from it, you jump up, run over the top, stand on his back almost while he's crawling in front of you and shoot over the top of him.
Well, the first time I went hog hunting in Florida, I
yes,
didn't...
Yes, Jim, this is actually not untrue.
Yeah.
Called hunting.
Okay, we're gonna get into that. I've only got about 30 seconds left. Around here, this is Fish and Frank in the chair, and you can get to us with fishandfranks.com, FishinFranks.com. And the whole cast and crew from down here at Fish and Frank's. Fish and Frank in the chair. We've got Robert in the chair across from me. We've got Captain Kale. And we've got Jim Loxton, an outdoor fisherman, hunter, and woodsman extraordinaire. Okay, anyway, Captain Kale, you just got back in. He literally walked in the door during the show. And you just got back from a shark charter. What happened today?
Yeah, we went out after some big and little sharks. We had one of our FWC, our fish and game officers,
so
out there with us today.
What are you looking for, big, and what do you classify big, what do you classify small?
Something his kids can handle, I classify as small. 3 foot and under. Light tackle stuff.
So light spinning tackle, light bait casting.
Yep. Yep.
So what'd you do? You catch anything? I heard you had a little bit of excitement.
Yeah, we had about a 7-foot bull shark on. Bob had it on for, probably a good 40 minutes. We straightened the hook at the boat. The kids caught just dozens of little black tips today.
So you guys had a pretty great trip.
Real good day. They were happy with it. They had a lot of fun. Man, was it hot out there today.
So what were you using for bait?
Mullet and Spanish mackerel.
Okay.
They're Spanish sardines.
Spanish sardines. So what kind of sharks did you catch?
Mostly black tips, little black tips, yearlings.
I'm trying to promote your business here, and I know Bob hooked up a big one, and you're sitting there silent like the Sphinx.
He's building it up.
Now, Mr. Yeah. Sphinx.
You don't play Stairway to Heaven first.
But come on, let's hear about this big shark.
Put him on that, and he'll walk around and be more animated.
Yeah, we're going to have to put you on the phone to let you wander around the building.
Yeah. One of the big reels took off, and of course, Bob jumped right onto it. I don't know how many of his daughters he pushed out of the way to get to it. But he got on it, and good 45-minute fight. Big, big bull. Probably one of the whitest heads I've ever seen on a bull shark. It just a big, big
head. You're probably talking 9-foot bull shark.
It was 7 or 8. Got it right to the boat, just ready to grab the leader, and the hook straightened out. You know, it's a big fish moving its head, and you know, a lot of tackle doesn't stand
so
up.
So 7-8 foot, you're talking 400 pounds?
Yeah.
That's not a bad fish.
400 pounds? No. Not at all.
Not a bad fish.
Not at all. And, you know, and him being a wildlife officer, he's on the water all the time and doesn't get to throw a hook in the water. And today he did.
Yeah, well, that's kind of more interesting than Bob's a really nice guy. Now, you went to Costa Rica with Bob.
Yeah.
He's the FWC guy. You guys went down there chasing snakes and stuff?
Yeah, he's big time into snakes, too. I mean, he's a conservationist. I mean, he's just really into the nature in general.
Okay, so. We got to get Bob on the show, but he's the nutcase that got bit by the snake down there, right?
Yeah, but it wasn't a venomous snake. It was just a snake.
Okay.
It wasn't a bad lightning strike.
No, yeah. It was. I mean, they go down there. They're chasing eyelash vipers. They're what all snakes did you see down there?
17 different species total.
And
you know, Bushmaster, that's like the creme de la creme, but we had a jumping viper, hognose vipers, eyelash vipers, 4 color phases of eyelash vipers, which was really, really cool.
And you didn't get to see a fur de lance, too, did you?
Yeah, fur de lance, which was kind of...
Isn't that super deadly?
That's a really hot snake, yeah. If you get bit,
you're like dead and there's nothing anybody's going to do.
No, you're going to wish you were dead.
Well, they didn't only just see venomous snakes, they seen poisonous frogs.
Yeah, you love chasing those poisonous frogs. Yeah. You've been chasing those for what?
Well, the red-eyed tree frogs. I mean, heck, when you took me down there for the first time to fulfill the dream of the rooster fish, I mean, that's all I wanted to do was the rooster fish and red-eyed tree frog. So, fish during the day and then walked around the grounds all night trying to find a frog. You know, so
a poisonous frog. The people that live here in the Disney movie called the United States don't realize that there are frogs that can kill you.
Oh, yeah.
Not snakes, not sharks, frogs.
This is like Bambi Land here.
Killer Kermits.
Yeah, Kermit the serial killer.
Well, it gets worse than that. They don't even bite you. You just have to touch them.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. And that's what Robert, if you guys, we're trying to give you a little insight into Robert's brain, you know, go down to Costa Rica, spend all this money to go around and chase stuff that will kill him.
Yeah, that's his idea of fun, right?
And he's blind.
Running around. Yeah, and he's blind, too. Legally blind. So
here's the blind guy running around in the dark chasing poisonous animals.
Right.
This is wonderful.
The thrill.
Everyone's got to have a hobby.
Yeah, my hobby, I think, is worrying about you. Anyway, so you caught some nice sharks today, Captain, on your charter.
Yeah, we actually even had to help Captain Carl with one of his sharks today. He got about a 7 or an 8 foot lemon to the boat.
Wow.
And it's kind of nice. I mean, Carl's a redfish fanatic. That's what Carl does. You want to catch redfish, you go with Carl. And I jumped on the boat to give him a hand and show him how to handle the lemon sharks to make it much, much easier.
Yeah, if you walk in the store and say, well, I want to do shark and tarpon and stuff like that, you're going to get Kale's card. If you want to do extreme red fishing, then you get Carl's card. And the two of you guys have pretty much got everything. Not that he doesn't do sharks and you don't do snook and redfish. It's just, you know, everyone's got their
strong points.
Cross-training.
Yeah, cross-training. Yeah. So, Jim, back to that. We were talking about hunting. I think we got a minute or two left. Now, a Savage rifle. Now, I know they're great guns. And
there's a lot of nice firearms out on the market. The nice thing about a Savage, they put more into the rifle than any other manufacturer before it goes in a box.
Really?
It's true. It's bore-sided. About 99% of them have the new AccuTrigger on them, where you're adjustable from 2.5 to 6 pounds of pull. You don't have to have a gunsmith and a custom trigger job done to it.
So out of the box, it's
ready to go.
It's custom out of the box.
Put a scope on it if it didn't come as a package and sight it out, and it's ready to go out and shoot paper to
Now, how do you sight in your guns? This, you know, when I go out, I remember I just used to throw a sandbag down and point it at it and hope for the best.
For the most part, yeah. A lot of times on my boat guns, I'll just pull my boat out, kind of look down it, and then look at my sight to see where I'm at, get it on paper 25 yards, and then just walk it out. Usually I sight most of my guns in and out at 100 yards.
So, and does the, now, this Savage gun, what gun was it you like so much?
270.
Okay, the 270. Is there a model number for that?
They make about four different models in the 270 caliber. I prefer myself, I'm shooting a laminate thumb hole, but a synthetic is more of a price point gun, and it does just as well, and it's more durable, actually. I just went for the prettiness.
Yeah, went for the pretty of the wood. Huh? Now, if you change ammunition, do you have to recite your gun?
You have to find what ammo works for any gun. You've got a lot of different manufacturers out there you can deal with, but it's quality. That's usually what you're getting.
Okay. So, anyway, I guess I kind of stumped Jim on that one. But anyway, Captain Kale's been catching big sharks. Captain Carl's been catching big sharks. I'm Fishing Frank. Robert and Chair across me, Captain Kale and Jim Logsdon. We're going to be back in just a little while. Stay tuned. Hopefully, there's some exciting moments to come. I'm not sure, but I'm planning on being really startled. So, we'll see you then. Hey there, this is Fish and Frank, and welcome back to Fish and Frank in the chair here, Robert in the chair across from me, Captain Kale and Jim Logsdon. Now, I remember as a kid, we were talking a little bit about hunting and everything. I used to always hunt with my dad. And my dad was one of these guys where if you moved, he yelled at you. If you slept, he yelled at you. I mean, you know, here I am in the sun. It's beautiful. It's warm. The natural instinct for a 16, 17-year-old kid after partying all night is to go to sleep in the sunshine. I never thought it was that big a deal. He used to get really upset about it. I don't know why. But anyway, as we go out hunting, we always hunted together. My dad always, one of us would stand still and the other would make a slow drive around. Now, you guys can back me up on this. When you're trying to push deer, only a goofball's out there yelling, hollering, banging, clunking, because the deer will lay down and let the guy walk right by because it's easy for them to tell where he is, right?
Granted, to the point, you're correct.
Now,
but they do that. Out west, it's big. They'll actually take and they'll suit up. You know, everybody's wearing their orange hats and vests and such, and they'll put a couple of shooters up, and they'll drive through a part of woods and... You know, they'll be yelling and screaming and everything else, and that keeps them from laying down on you and get them up and push them out.
Now, that's what they always did up by us, too. I mean, they'd get this whole boatload, you know, whole truckload of guys, and guys would stand them all around the square off, and then the other guys would run through and do a deer drive.
Yep.
First thing I did when I hear them going is I would get down behind a tree and make myself as small as possible.
Those bucks don't get big antlers like that because they're dumb. They're smart.
So, but... Anyway, Dad was standing on this railroad track one time, and I go around, and I'm take a few steps, stop, try and get him worried about it, because I don't have enough guys to make a lot of noise or drive them the way they did, but if they don't know where you are, if you pause for a bit, it kind of freaks them out.
Correct.
So I was doing this, and all of a sudden I see this little herd of deer, probably 15, 20 deer in there, and this is up north Wisconsin bucktail, and nice big deer, 150-ish, you know, give or take a little bit, and I'm going around finally, and I'd get them going in the right direction, then I'd see them, they'd start moving the other way, so I'd go back and make a big outside run around, and
get
you got
around.
Insulated boots, jackets, under, you know, long underwear. I mean, it's November up in the far north, and so I'm sweating like a dog, and I get them going back that way, and where I could start seeing them, I'd start getting real slow again and moving a little bit, and I mean, it took me probably 2-3 hours to get this group of deer heading for my father, and I'd run one way, and then I'd have to run all the way back around the other way and keep going back and forth. It's like, you know, hurting them. So, and I finally see them go walking right off, and they'd get just out of my sight, and I hear that crack of my dad's 308.
Yeah.
And I, you know, you can tell whose gun it is, can't you? When
you hear
it go off.
Oh, absolutely.
Doesn't every gun have a little bit, like, its own signature?
Each gun does, but a caliber does it even more.
Yeah.
You know, 308's a good round, and it's a lot different crack than you do from a 30-06 or a 270.
Yeah, each caliber seems to have a kind of a signature crack, you know, when it goes off. So, I heard his going off, and I'm like, I hear the gun go off, and I'm thinking, all right, because it was, I lost sight of the deer. 30 seconds later, pow. So I go running. I'm about, oh, a good half a mile back into the woods. And I go running up there, finally get up on him. I go, did you get him? And I'm all out of breath and sweaty. And I mean, I've been working on it. He goes, yeah, something about the smug look on his face. And he's standing there. He's not like chasing the deer. He's not going around looking at anything. He's just standing there with this dopey grin on his face. Now, mind you, this is the same guy who's been yelling at me my entire life, you know, about standing still on there, not doing anything. I said, well, where is he? He says, over there. I'm like, where? Because I'm expecting a deer. He says, there's nothing left but a little bit of fur. That squirrel ain't gonna upset me anymore. I mean, I spent 2 hours driving deer towards this guy, and he blows out a squirrel because it was annoying. It was chattering at him. You know how squirrels would yell at you. I was like, oh my God. Anyway, so that's my hunting story. That's my big game hunting. I've shot big deer and I've done all that, but I think that's the one that stands out in my mind the most, you know.
Well, like you said, you know, most of the time when you still hunt, you have to sit still. You know, the deer see the movement, they'll see you take your hat off, put it back on, to where that's where hogs are really nice, because you don't have to sit still. You can actually drive for them. Or,
so what's happened to you on a hog hunt? I need a quick it's tough when somebody puts you on the spot.
I've shot quite a few of them in my life.
Have any of them shot back?
None of them's ever shot back. The best one, I probably had my daughter when she was 13. She had fed up for some deer hunting and came back, and she says, Dad, there's two hogs out there eating my corn. Says, there ain't gonna be any corn left for my deer. I said, well, shoot one. So I can do that. Perfect shot of a 30-30 rifle. It still ran 100 yards, but she got her first hog, and she smiled from ear to ear, and then later that night got her first buck.
Now, how long ago was this?
Well, it was a good 10, 12 years ago.
So she's really into it by now.
Oh, yes.
And we're getting a little low on time. But now, how did Carl do on his charter kill?
Real well. He was fishing maybe 50 yards from me, so he was into the same fish that I was. Lots of little black tip. When I had pulled up, he had been there for a little bit. He said that he had a big one break off, and then they latched onto that big lemon while we were sitting next to him.
Now, what's the difference between a lemon and a bull? Not a lot, is there?
Size wise, no, but in their fight, there's a little bit of difference. A little bit more raw power in the lemon shark. It's a slow, steady, strong fight.
Where the bull shark's a little more erratic. When you've got a 6 or 8 foot bull on, you can tell because they're a little more side to side. They're not just as much raw digging outward power.
Right. It's not quite black tip speed, but they do have a little burst of speed to them, but much, much slower, steadier fight of the lemon.
Okay. Well, this is Fish and Frank, and we're this is it for this hour. We're going to be back next hour. If you come back next hour, or if your station keeps us up next hour, we hope to see you. We're going to have more hunting, more fishing, more unusual things to come up. We're going to try and get a little bit of, I don't know what's going on today. Everything's great, but I like that. It's a dangerous place. You got 1,000-pound bears wanting something you have. Yeah, like the part that's right next to, well, anyway. Hey, bear. You ever been bear hunting, Jim?
No, actually, I'm waiting for them to open up in Florida.
Really? Kale?
Oh, yeah. We bear hunt up in Pennsylvania.
All right. What goes on bear hunting?
It's a lot like deer hunting, only way more boring.
Way more boring.
Yeah. A lot more sleep involved.
Okay.
They're not as skittish.
Yeah, they're not as skittish. They're deep in the woods a lot of times. God forbid if you get one and have to drag it over two mountains. You know, you're not getting out of the woods till dark, and then you've got to take it to a weigh station where they take a tooth out of it. They take the heart and the kidneys, and then you've got to wait 3 weeks to see if it's okay to eat it.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
I see what you mean by boring. Okay, I had all this fun. I shot it. I worked my butt off getting it back, and I'm going to wait 3 weeks to get it going again.
Right, right. And that's if they tell you it's healthy and okay to eat.
Just enjoy this thing. But this is Fish and Frank setting in. Robert and Chair across from me, Captain Kale and Jim Longston. And Jim, now, go ahead, Kale. You were talking about black bears.
Yeah, it's, you know, we did a lot of our hunting, you know, in the hardwood forests. try and get as close to that landfill as you possibly can.
Yeah.
Because that's, you know, the Golden Corral, the buffet for,
oh, yeah,
for bear.
Now, when I grew up, we would go to the garbage dump at night and take the 22s, and we would shoot rats. And up until the time when the bears all came up, and then it was time to leave.
That's the difference between up north and Florida.
Yeah.
Down here, they're eagle sanctuaries. Up there, they're bear sanctuaries.
Yeah. Yeah, you want to see a whole bunch of bald eagles just heading down over here. It's absolutely amazing, our national symbol. It kind of coincided right with the administration we have. I shouldn't say that, but I mean, I'm bad. But anyway, hopefully the First Amendment have protected me on that one. But anyway, so, Jim, you're waiting for bears to open up in Florida. You got any advice for him, Cal? Do they still have that?
A comfortable seat.
Do they still have that thing where you got to wait to see if they're edible?
Down here, I don't know. It's been so long since they've had a bear season down here.
They were protected down here for years.
And they still are. They're starting to get really overpopulated for some strange reason in Collier County in the Naples area. They're having a lot of problems with bears.
Well, they've had a lot of water, a lot of food, a lot of water, a lot of snakes to eat. You know.
Yeah. Is that the one thing the pythons can't eat is the bear?
Yeah, that's the next thing they're having on the internet. These pythons are killing bears. Like, one out of 200,000 snakes.
Don't say that. They'll want to save the bears. We'll never get an open season.
I like the thing about they're saying the pythons are killing everything, the glades. It's the only thing that the gators have had to eat in years.
Right.
You know? So, anyway, we're going to be back. More of this, and hopefully better than this. I'm actually expecting better than this as we come back for our next segment. And you got Fish and Frank, Robert, Captain Kale, Jim. We're all down here at Fish and Frank's. We'll see you back in a little bit.
Don't get me started.
Hey there, this is Fish and Frank, and Fish and Frank in the chair here, and you can go to fishandfranks.com, fishinfranks.com. You know, Fish and Frank says in no G in Southern Fishing. We don't go fishing, we go fishing. And so this is Fish and Frank here, and they both catch fish. Now, Robert, you're in the chair over there. We've been discussing who wants to start. We're just so excited today.
I'll jump in here.
Okay, you just jump in.
I think that one thing about the outdoors, you know, we're talking about hunting a lot here. That's usually...
I wish we were talking a lot about something. Go ahead, but start over.
Yeah. We're kind of hopscotching.
Go ahead.
Hopscotching back and forth.
I didn't screw it up, Robert. Go ahead. You can handle it, buddy. Get it.
You're under control. We're out of control. The fishing and the hunting aspect. You know, every one of us, where you were talking about a story with your father taking you out hunting. You know, every one of us, our father or grandfather or somebody took us outside, you know, fishing or hunting. It was my father.
Your father?
Yeah. My
Kale?
Father took me hunting.
Yeah, it was my father also.
Jim?
My grandfather.
Yeah, you know.
Cane pole in hand.
Took you out fishing the first time?
As a young tyke, and I've had it in my blood ever since.
Well, you know, in the 1800s, rods were common, but reels weren't.
Oh, I know I'm old, but I didn't know.
That's twice, right to the midships.
I think I'm bleeding there by the nose.
But it was your dad, and my dad. Yeah, my grandfather, I don't think I ever went hunting with him.
I went fishing with my grandfather, but
I did go fishing with him. I did do that. Yeah, I did go fishing with him.
The one grandfather died when I was young. The other
it's harder for him to take you fishing when that happens, isn't it?
The other wasn't really an outdoorsy guy.
I mean,
you know,
so
I came from a small town in Pennsylvania. When I say small, I mean you could accurately shoot a rifle across this town. The stop signs all said whoa.
No red light. just
it was
slow sign.
Either hunting and fishing or drinking and drugs. And that was the way the kids went in my hometown. And I kind of went with the hunting and the fishing.
Okay. Jim, now, how was it you started with your grandpa? Who took you hunting the first time?
Actually, my brother took me for the first time. And, you know, when we start talking about rifles and pistols and such, it ain't always hunting. There's a lot of shooting, you know, a lot of paper.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's what I got my daughter started at a very young age, shooting soft drink cans at 25 yards with a 22.
Yeah.
And
my wife is absolutely begging me to take her up to the range up here.
It's not always about killing something.
That's how my dad babysat me and my brother. He sat us down on the gun bench, handed us a brick of 22, a bag full of empty aluminum cans, and here, go to town.
Yeah. So, Robert, what was it with you? How'd you get started?
It was actually my father taking me fishing and catching a 3-pound bass for my first fish that I can remember at 3 years old.
Now, the backstory to that is you were supposed to be doing what?
Oh, no, that was a different episode.
Oh, okay.
That was because I had already gotten addicted to fishing.
Okay, because I heard, you know, they wanted you to get into, like, baseball and stuff like that.
Yeah, they wanted
like
me
that.
To play baseball, and I had already caught my 3-pound bass, so I was addicted to fishing.
So you went up to this thing, and you're supposed to be playing baseball, and you saw the lake over there?
No, they were all going to go down to the river and fish for a little bit until the game started. And I said, okay, the game's over. I'm going fishing. And I threw a temper tantrum, and at that point, I no longer played baseball or probably touched a baseball again.
So, throw like a girl.
I was probably about 6 years old or so, you know, so I had already been fishing a few more times since then, but I was that addicted where the sports part of it interested me in no way, shape, or form. If they were going to go down to the river to go fishing, I was ready to go.
Okay.
So that's probably one of my earliest memories of the fishing aspect of it. Got
a
me
a 3-pound bass will definitely, when you're
I've
3
still,
years old,
I've still
that
got
will.
That fish mounted on the wall.
Really?
I've still got it at the house. Yeah, absolutely. But, I mean, the other thing is like, my father was killed when I was young, but he took me hunting when I was really young. You were telling a story about where you were 16. I was probably about 7 or 8 years old the first time he took me hunting and went several more years over that time frame. After years later, after him passing away and everything, I realized he wasn't taking me hunting. He was taking me outside to enjoy the outdoors and appreciate everything that it had, and on top of teaching me patience that would furthermore help me with fishing. And
really helped you trying to work with me for the last 16 years.
Worked out good so far.
Yeah, it's worked out
good. I got him excited to go out and catch poisonous snakes now.
But it took me into the outdoors altogether. You know, I pursued more of the fishing aspect of it because I love it more. Maybe I would have loved it a little bit more if my father would have been around as far as the hunting goes, but I still love being outdoors. I've gone hunting many times with friends over the years and just been a witness to it or whatever.
The thrill of it.
You know, just to be out there in the woods. The killing and all that.
What I like is
just a secondary part of it.
I finally got to go turkey hunting a little while ago, right? And everybody's all in this camo. We're going to go more into that and the turkey and all that stuff in just a minute. Anyway, you got Fish and Frank here. We got Robert in the chair across there. We're guest hosting. We got Captain Kale and Jim Longston as guests today. And got to tell you guys, thank you so much for listening. We'll be back in a little while. Enjoy the outdoors. We're back. And we can see the stuff, and we're back. And isn't that a way to get into it? This is Fish and Frank here. It's toasting. We got Robert here, my co-host, cohort. And 16 years we've been working together here at Fish and Frank's. And our guest today is Captain Kale and Jim Logston. And we've been talking about different stuff and hunting and fishing and all that. And just kind of a mix-match show. But I got to tell you, you know, talk about just being out there. I got my first chance to go turkey hunting, and I really want to go turkey hunting. I'd love to be able to do that, but I didn't have, and I wasn't going to spend $200 for 2 hours of turkey hunting to get the whole suit and everything. So I'm out there, got my jeans and a regular jacket and everything, and sitting there with my cowboy hat on, you know, so I can see, and glasses, and they're all camoed up and they're behind all the stuff. I've got one of these little pop out camo umbrellas that I got laid down sitting in a silver lawn chair. And I'm the only one the turkeys came to.
That's strange.
They came right around the corner, and I'm sitting there. And as soon as I made a move to get up and to get a shot at them, because we'd been out there hours, I could hear them clucking back and forth and all this. But they actually came right around in front of me. The guys in the full camo and everything else, and the fancy boots and all this stuff.
All blended in.
They never even got to see them. I got to see them at least for a second.
That's really, really strange, because turkeys...
Was it down here, or was
it? Yeah, it was just
north?
Right over here in Punta Gorda.
Oh, then it makes perfect sense. These Osceola turkeys are dumb.
Osceola turkeys are dumb? Now, I take it this is a special turkey.
Yeah, only in Florida.
Five species of turkeys in the U.S.
Five in the U.S. Okay. Yeah. Quick quiz.
Uh-oh.
Anybody know any of the other ones?
Merriman's.
Easterns. Western.
Okay. Jim, have you gone turkey hunting?
I've shot my share of Easterns.
Easterns?
I've had an Osceola. I've not had a Merriman.
Okay. Kale?
Eastern.
Eastern.
All Eastern.
Yeah.
Okay, now I'm taking, you did that in Pennsylvania.
Did that in Pennsylvania. Yeah. I've given up on the turkey down here. I can't talk to them like I can the turkey up north. They don't respond the same way the turkey up north. Mustangs, I don't think I can get that drawl on the call. I think that's the issue.
Y'all, come now. Turkey over here. Turkey over here.
So. Turkey can hear, but it can see better than any other animal I can think of. Yeah. Well, I mean, it can see a grasshopper from 100 yards away. And that's,
really?
And that's why they camo up, because they can see. It's like a pair of binoculars. I mean, when you can see a grasshopper from 100 yards, yeah.
And they're an intelligent bird.
Yes, they are.
Really?
Yeah.
Turkey's an intelligent bird.
Yeah. And they can see 100% of the exact same color spectrum that we can.
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah.
They can see everything
the
we can see?
Exact color spectrum that we see.
270 degrees they can see.
All right. And I think we can see what, about?
About 180 at best.
I would say at best. I would say more like 100. Yeah, so
they see you.
Yes, they see you. But I don't know why that stuff happens to me. We're talking about just being out there and having fun. And, I mean, I'm sitting there with all these turkeys around me, and the guys are trying to get up closer because they're right around the thing. You could hear them calling behind this brush pile. They finally walked out, got in front of me, but as soon as I moved the rifle, it was all over with. Now, what's your favorite gun for shooting turkey, Jim?
12-gauge shotgun. I've got a Mossberg turkey gun, actually. It's got a double-tight turkey choke on it. Federal makes a nice turkey load with the flight stopper wad in it, where it holds the wad a lot, but or the shot a lot farther out. So 50 yards is nothing to drop a turkey at with it.
All right, Kale.
If I'm going to make a turkey gun, I'm going to build one exactly like the one that my dad had. He had taken one of those old New England Arms, Harrington and Richardson still reproduces them. Yeah, old school, single shot 10 gauge.
Oh, 10 gauge?
10 gauge.
You don't want to have a shoulder left.
He cut it down to about 20 inches, put a turkey choke in it. We patterned it once and put iron sights on it. It patterned so tight so far. And this thing was just the bane of turkey in Pennsylvania. You could reach out and touch them at 50 yards without worrying about
10
it.
10 gauge. Oh,
and
my
it was
God.
Just, the only bad thing was, you didn't want to shoot it, you know, propped up against an oak tree more than once.
Oh, my God. Because I've shot 8 and 10 gauge.
You only have to shoot once at a turkey.
Yeah, the only good thing you had to shoot once is in. Nobody in their right mind was pulling that trigger twice.
I remember, you know, you're sitting there laying on your back as the goose are flying over the geese, and you've got an 8 gauge or a 10 gauge, and you get up to shoot it, and it's like an anti-aircraft gun.
It basically is.
You know what I mean? You're shooting it, okay,
the
they're right about there.
The concept is the same.
Basically, that's what Kel did. He took an anti-aircraft gun and chopped it down.
Jeez, many crickets.
Going back to the 50 bull.
I'm thinking 20 gauge, 410, you know, something, you know, light caliber for, you know, short shots in the woods.
Oh, no. No? We'll make sure you got it. We didn't want turkey getting away.
I'm going to get you, sucker.
Exactly.
You're going to die. There's no doubt of it. Oh, my God. I don't know why that shocked me. It's Captain Kale.
Shouldn't be surprised by that.
Jimmy.
Okay.
There's no such thing as overkill.
No, I
can't kill anything more than dead.
That's right, I guess so. And, you know, I always say, if you're going to do it, overdo it. If you can't overkill it, why bother? So, Robert, you've been turkey hunting?
No, I've been deer hunting.
Okay, we don't want to talk to you.
No problem.
Okay. Come on, we're doing turkey here. Come on, give me a story here. Give me something.
I can give you a killer deer story.
He has a couple come in the shop every now and then.
Yeah. I was about 7 or 8 years old.
Okay.
And deer hunting, and my dad climbed up in the stand.
This better be good, by the way. There's been a heck of a buildup on this. Okay.
Well, especially with...
Go ahead.
He got the deer... Dad climbed up in the deer stand and said, I'm going to drop down an acorn or two if I see a deer coming around the corner, and you got to just sit down here real still. Well, I'm 7, 8 years old, petrified of the woods. It's dusk, just losing color. Deer comes around the corner, no acorn. I'm like, okay, sitting real still, and I'm watching the deer walk past. I'm waiting for the gunshot or an acorn to tell me, hey, there's a deer. Nothing. 30 seconds, minute, whatever. Seems like 2 hours. All of a sudden, I hear a twig snap behind me because we're a couple feet in the woods off the trail. And then I hear another twig, and I'm starting to just panic big time. And all of a sudden, I hear right behind me. I mean, right behind me. And then all heck breaks loose. Trees snapping and everything, and hoofs running off through the woods. And then I hear my dad start laughing, almost falls out of the deer stand laughing so hard because he watched the deer walk up behind me. He wanted to see if I would sit still enough. He
took a smell of you.
And the deer literally walked up about 10, 12 inches behind me and sniffed me, never saw me, and panicked and bolted. He just wanted to make sure that I
was... So did you panic and drop a load?
Probably. I had a heart attack inside.
I meant shoot a load. I mean, shoot your gun. No, you didn't have a gun. You were six.
Yeah.
No. I didn't start actually carrying a gun until I was about 11.
Yeah, I wasn't carrying a gun at all. I was just along for the learning experience. But to have him up there just laughing in hysterics to see...
I think I would have liked your dad a lot.
One not far off. We were squirrel hunting.
Okay. on the we're gonna get that squirrel hunting on the way coming back. You got Fish and Frank as the host. You got my partner in crime, Robert. You got Captain Kale, Jim Logson, and we're all going to be back. Don't come. Okay, we'll get you guys back in just a minute or so. Hey there, this is Fish and Frank, and don't put up with us anymore. But Fish and Frank in the chair, Robert in the chair across from me, Captain Kale and Jim Logson, and we've been talking hunting, fishing, and just kind of a mix match of stuff. But Robert was telling us about his stories of being a young man, 6-7 years old, and having himself a time with a deer getting sniffed. You were almost snogged by a deer in the woods.
Oh, it scared the daylights out of me.
So,
could you imagine what would happen if he'd have licked the back of your head?
If he would have snogged you right there.
I would have jumped right out of the... I would have climbed up in the deer stand.
He would have never went in the woods again.
Dad would have wetted himself.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt.
Not many people have been snogged by a deer, but you did good, Robert. Yeah. So, Kale, you were talking about something.
Kind of along the same lines. We were squirrel hunting and cold. And snowy a little bit. You sit up underneath the hemlock trees up north because there's no snow underneath them. It keeps your butt kind
of
warm.
Hemlock is one of those things I always love because people tell me, oh, I'm eating this vitamin because it's all natural. I said, what, does it have hemlock in it? It's good for you. It's natural.
We sat so there.
Under the hemlock tree.
And I'm trying my best to stay awake.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Hunting in the wintertime in Pennsylvania, that is some of the best nap
time
there is.
Yeah, but it's nap time. If you can find a ray of sunshine somewhere.
That cold wind across your face when you're all nice and snuggled up warm in your snowsuit. So I was just starting to nod off, and stuff starts falling on my hat. And I know it's a squirrel because it's chunks of acorn. And I can hear it getting closer and closer, and then before long, I feel pressure on the top of my hat. And Dad's sitting right next to me, and I said, Dad, what is it? And I pointed up to my hat. And I saw his eyes go wide, and he starts bringing around his shotgun nice and slow. And he's not going much further above my head with it, and he says, hold real still. And I don't know who ran first.
What was the bow and arrow guy?
The squirrel was sitting half on a tree, half on my hat. And I don't know which one of the two of us ran first once we saw the shotgun, me or the squirrel.
So your dad was going to do a William Tell instead of an apple. He was using a squirrel.
It wasn't the last time.
I like your dad.
We were deer hunting, and he says, stop. And with me being colorblind, it's hard for me to see animals in the woods unless they're moving. So I couldn't see anything. He says, you see those deer right in front of you? No. You don't see them? No. You've got three deer standing right in front of you. Okay.
Make one of them move, Dad.
Get down on one knee. So I got down on one knee thinking that maybe that'll make me see better. And something cold against my neck. And he set the barrel of that 270 right up on my shoulder and let one fly. Whoa. That'll ring your bell.
Yes, when it will.
It does explain a lot about you.
When somebody uses you as a rifle rest, let me tell you, that will wake you up.
Yeah, like I say, it does. Now, did he get the deer?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it was worth it.
He had a good solid mount to shoot from.
Yeah. I mean, I got to say, don't try this at home, folks. This is probably not your best ideas. But as a professional with firearms, now, does this explain a lot more about Captain Kale?
Yes, it does.
Yes, it does.
Answers a lot of questions.
Answers a
lot of questions.
You know, when you spend your youth as a professional gun rest.
low center of gravity.
Yeah, well, that's true. So, Jim, so have you been out hunting and had general mayhem pursue to the delight of others?
I've had everything from a bear try to climb in the tree with me, but probably the one of the most exciting was an early morning deer hunt. Get on the climber, put it on a big old pine tree, and climb up. Just about daybreak. It wasn't quite light enough yet. I kept hearing something up above me, and I'm thinking, well, it must be a possum or something coming down out of the tree. And all of a sudden, I hear, brrr, and I pull the flashlight out, and I look up, and I've got Mr. Bobcat wanting to come down the tree, and I'm already halfway up the tree. So, and that was not a...
Somehow, you know, I've been hanging around with you for, what, 15 years or so now? And I could see that happening to you. You're climbing up the tree. The bobcats tried to go down the tree.
And we met in the middle, and he lost. I couldn't get down the tree quick enough, and I think he wanted to get through me, so he got popped.
Yeah. And then you say you've been up in a tree stand, a bear tried to come up with you?
I was actually archery. I do a lot of archery hunting, too, and it was the last day of archery some years ago, and I wasn't coming out of the woods. I had a place where I knew there I had some bucks and such, and fixed me some lunch. My wife actually got you taken care of, and I go in and I climb in the tree, and about daybreak, about 300-pound black bear comes by, and he walks by, and I'm like, oh, just keep on going. And he stopped, turned around, and came back, and he continued to climb up the tree. Finally, we talked back and forth about it for a few minutes, and he finally went and laid down, and I realized he wanted my peanut butter jelly sandwiches.
I was going to say, have you checked your cologne?
No, I had peanut butter jelly sandwiches.
You might want to switch to Old Spice. I doubt if that attracts bed, but you were eating peanut butter and jelly in the woods.
Yeah.
Good idea.
No firearms, only a stick and string, but he finally left, but it was scary.
Okay. Well, now, I think everybody has had some experience. The great thing about being outside is just so many things can happen and not happen. It's just cool. But this is the name of the show.
This stuff doesn't happen sitting on your couch.
No.
And we are encouraging you to get out and just experience life and experience it outside. Planner, this is Fish and Frank hosting. Robert, my partner in crime, across from me in the chair, Captain Kale and Jim Larson. And we're going to be back for one more segment. And we'll see you then. Hey there, guys. We're going to be wrapping it up today. I'm so glad you were listening. We want you to get outside, experience the outdoors. It is so cool outside, and you're not going to see it from your couch. The TV isn't the same. Get out there and enjoy it. The name of the show, the name of the show is I'm Fishing Frank Doting. Robert, my partner, crime in the chair across from me, and Jim Larkston, Captain Kale. Thanks, everybody. See you.